Please stand for a prayer. Lord, we ask that you bless tonight's session, tonight's public consultation. We ask for your wisdom, and we ask for productivity in the end. In Jesus' name, amen.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Aaron Abifum. I'm here in my capacity as the Assistant Director for the Department of Environmental Planning and Protection. This is the public consultation for the proposed Sixth Sense project here in Grand Bahama. Tonight's meeting we will address and be brought up. We'll make you aware of the environmental components as it relates to this project. The meeting will go in this way. As we all know, you can plan something, but it only survives the first contact. We will have the project development team come up. They will present the project. They will present their environmental team. After that is done, the floor will be open for questions as it relates to the environmental components and the socioeconomic environmental impact of this project. I do ask, please, that you are you aware that if your question is not answered tonight, the project proponents have 21 business days from today to address your questions, and you have the same amount of time which to supply your questions to both the project proponent and the Department of Environmental Planning and Protection. So you have until the end of business on February 28th, in which to send in any questions or concerns as it relates to the environmental impact of the proposed project. The email address that you will send them to, as far as the department is for the department, is grandbahama@depp.gov.bs. I will repeat that address throughout the night, so don't forget, if you didn't get it now, I will make sure before this meeting ends, you are well aware of it. Also, the project proponent will also give you their email address. Their EIA is online, and they will provide you that link. That document is to be online and available to you until the project's completion. I don't mean the completion of the environmental review process, but until the project is substantially completed. If at any time that document is not there, or the documents that follow, such as this public consultation report and the EMP is not there, please feel free to contact the department and let us know. Are there any questions so far on this housekeeping matters that have been given to you? Now, I do extend my apologies because I went straight into my spiel. My director will, of course, tell me off for not observing protocol. I welcome all of you. I especially recognize the MP for this great constituency, even though he in North, and I still think the best one is in the South. Ms. Lewis, it's a pleasure to see you, as always. So I will, at this now time, turn the meeting over to the project development team.
Thank you very much. I want to start by saying thank you to Mr. Iram Lewis for coming today, and thank you to the entire DEP department for this hearing, and as we call it in the United States, a hearing is not a hearing, we call it a public consultation. This is excellent. And I want to tell everybody, many people ask me, are you nervous or do you not like this? No, I've been doing stuff in the United States in the Northeast. And so to have a chance to do this in the Bahamas is actually a great privilege, and I very much appreciate it, both the tone and tenor of the people who live here and the overall opportunity. So thank you very much. So a little bit about the development teams. I'll start with that. So Weller Development, I'm Mark Weller. I've been doing this for, I'd it's hard to say this, but I've been doing this for almost 30 years on my own. We've built and developed a lot of projects. Our expertise and experience tackling very complex projects has been demonstrated just in the last few years alone. Some neat things we've done, we developed one of the top hotels in the United States. It was voted number one in Condé Nast, which is really interesting. Just in the last few years, we've basically developed around 2 million square feet. We have a large pipeline of over $500 million right now, and we've done very large investments with institutional and very sophisticated investors, such as Goldman Sachs, which we did a $233 million investment with in Baltimore. Our company is a little different than others. We utilize a triple bottom line approach, and that means we benefit the surrounding communities, the environment, and the investors. It's how we live. It's how we think. It attracts the best teammates to come on our team. It definitely makes the community feel as if they're part of the project. And as we think about the environment, we've been working so long and hard in these waterfront environments, many of them in very rough conditions, such as the places we've worked at in the Northeast, such as Baltimore. We've done everything we can, and we work on trying to repair. Down here, we're trying to do everything we can to help with that as well. But we're experts in developing sustainable, including navigating very complex regulatory systems. Our partners on this is Capital, Pegasus Capital Advisors. They've invested almost $3 billion in close to 100 transactions. They have a 25-year track record, and they have five separate private equity funds. They were a perfect partner for this, and we could not have been more excited to have met them. They were founded with a vision to change private equity by integrating social and environmental factors into the investment process. I think, like, I read that from the page, but I want to say something about that. They were doing this long before it was fashionable. So this is a company that has done this for a very long time, and they have taken this triple bottom line approach very seriously. They're the first U.S. private equity fund manager accredited to the Green Climate Fund, which is a really big deal because they're incentivized to invest in countries like the Bahamas. And like I said, they've invested more than $2.6 billion. I think it's probably close to $3 billion now. Great businesses to grow and make a positive difference. There's all kinds of examples if you go on their website and all kinds of interesting investments they've made. But it's been incredible being teamed up with somebody who invests along those qualifications and lines. So Pegasus Capital Advisors, they are also with the Global Fund for Coral Reefs. So Pegasus Advisors is the leading global private market impact investment manager. So they're part of GFCR. Okay, that coalition is a public-private partnership driven by UN agencies, financial institutions, philanthropies, impact investors, and other organizations. So that's really important. That's the type of investor that we need for projects like these, and it is just absolutely a perfect situation. You know, I believe in luck to some degree. I think the harder you work, the luckier you get. But we met the perfect partner at the perfect time in the perfect project for us for this. And so they're looking to scale impactful projects for lasting environmental gains in the blue economy markets. And then what this is really my favorite part of the story, is that then we got to know Six Senses. And Six Senses is really an amazing brand. Okay, Six Senses Grand Bahama is an ecotourism resort that aims to boost local tourism, development, and environmental restoration activities. They want to forge partnerships with local organizations to restore coral reefs and revitalize local ecosystems, actively contributing to the economic rebound of the island through sustainable building strategies, minimizing environmental impact, and creating local jobs. But I think what's important to think about them is that, in addition to what I just read, they are known widely as the number one brand in the world. And maybe you could say they're number two. There's some really great brands out there, but they're in the top echelon of brands in the world. When we started this project, the idea was, let's aim high. Let's aim as high as we can when we bought the land, and let's see what we can bring in. And you can imagine how many people kind of laughed and scoffed when I told them the brands that I wanted to talk to. Well, it turns out they were wrong. Six Senses wanted to come to this island. They recognized how beautiful it was. They recognized the opportunity. So it was really to aim this high and then hit on our first and our most desired partner in this from a brand perspective was just a unique situation, and we're very fortunate. So talking about just track record and success, talk about us just for a little bit. And you can look at our website and other things, and you can Google us and find out all kinds of things. But I think one of the things that's relative to here is we built the number one hotel, Condé Nast Reader's Choice, in Baltimore. And many people say, Baltimore, how did you do that? Well, we started with something really interesting, kind of like we're starting with here. And then we backed into it, and we designed something great, and we created something really special, and we put a lot of heart and soul and a lot of passion into that project. I had incredible partners, incredible visionaries around me, and we just said, we're going to get it done, and we willed it to happen. And so that's been really a good example of what can be done, and then how to take sort of the brand of a city or the thoughts around a city or a region or something and make it better. Because, you know, prior to that, I don't think people were really putting Baltimore on the map for a top hotel in the United States in Condé Nast. Well, they did, and they do. So it's a great thing. Another project we've just completed, which I'm very proud of, is Port Covington. It's also called Baltimore Peninsula now. They had a big brand change around that. But we just delivered on over 1 million square feet there, actually 1.5 million with all the parking and everything, close to $1 billion worth of work. We were under budget, exceeded community commitments that we made, promised. One of the things that I'm so proud of is we did that project during COVID, and we delivered a lot of that and contracted that during COVID. And anybody who's in our industry knows that was, I would say, the most difficult and impossible time I've ever had in my career. And I'm very proud of the team and what they did. We have many of the same people on the team that worked on that project. Actually, it's a lot of the same people. So that project is $1 billion of institutional investment and $660 million towards the infrastructure also, which is being laid out right now. Very complex, very large, very different than this, but not from a community perspective. So core ethos, talk about this a little more just so everybody can understand, because it really is how we eat, breathe, and sleep. Is our core ethos is about the triple bottom line approach. It's about community impact, it's about sustainability, it's about steady returns. All of them have to be equal with each other, and they all have to be on equal footing. It's something we live and breathe. It starts at the top and it works its way down. We do everything we can to keep everything in check. Once in a while things get a little out of order, we put them back in order as soon as we catch ourselves. But we work really hard on making sure that we live to that. This is the question, this is kind of like, you know, one of those, why Grand Bahama? And I heard a lot of different thoughts about Grand Bahama, especially after people found out that we had purchased land here. And, you know, it really comes down to three things, and I've said this before, and I said it off the cuff the first time, but it was just how I felt. The people and spirit of Grand Bahama Island, the stunning natural beauty of the island, and Grand Bahama's perfect location. So I'll talk about each one just for 1 second. So people and spirit of Grand Bahama, I've said this before. Getting off the plane the first time I came here and then leaving here at the airport that same trip, I was moved by the people I met. I was moved by their sincerity and generosity. I was moved throughout the trip with all the different stories that I heard. I just felt like it was a place where I could make a difference, be a part of it, and actually really get along with the people here. I felt the hospitality was sincere and not forced or forged, and I felt like it was something where people, even through everything they had been through with Dorian and other things, and times were not easy during COVID, the spirit was still there, and everybody was so nice to me and so hospitable. Then you start rolling around the island, and you start looking at the different beaches and so on, and you start to realize the stunning natural beauty of the island is as good as anywhere you're going to see, certainly in the United States. But I would say it definitely is one of the most beautiful places I've ever been in my life. You know, I was looking at the water today. I was over there at Taino Beach and just getting a Cox salad and looking at the beach, and I just couldn't believe the colors of the water. Just on a regular day, I took a picture of Matt. It was like we were on a date or something, but I took a picture of him. I said, I got to get a picture of you with that. Your wife will love this. So I took this great picture because the blues and the colors and the beaches and this is a place that's utilized every day and really a busy place. This is not a remote beach. This is just a beach where there must have been 50 or 100 people walking around who just got off a bus. It just still looked beautiful. And so you talk about that and it's amazing. And then the perfect location, that's as important as anything when you think about the logic of this. First time I came here, second time, still to this day, You can't, even if you're in a small plane coming from West Palm, you don't even get to 7 or 10,000 feet and you're coming down again. It's a 25 to 35 minute flight and you're here. It takes longer to drive from West Palm to Fort Lauderdale right now than it does to get over here. And I think when I started realizing that, you know, I realized the proximity. I just realized it was a very special situation and something I believed in, especially given the infrastructure and so on that was here. So I'm going to turn this over now to Madhvi, who is my teammate, who's going to tell you a little bit about Six Senses and a little bit more about the project. Thank you.
Hi, everyone. I'm Madhvi Shukla. I'm the development manager for the Six Senses Project. I'm excited to share a little bit more of the project's specific details and vision with you all tonight. So Six Senses, Mark mentioned, is the number one luxury hotel group right now in the IHG brand. And I think sometimes that has a certain connotation of inaccessibility. And everything I've learned about this brand has been truly the opposite. They are internationally acclaimed, but they are so focused on ingraining themselves into their local community, being accessible for that local community, and providing advantages that everybody can participate in. As the name would suggest, Six Senses tries to tap into all of your senses, and five of those being touch, taste, smell, you know, a couple of those to name a few, and they try to focus the experience on catering to those needs. And so what they do is go the extra mile to care for their hosts. They want to get to know who you are before you arrive to the island. They want to make sure your experience is curated specifically towards you. They want to provide fun and quirkiness so that folks feel like, you know what, I can kick my shoes off and I don't have to think about anything as I spend my time here. They're extremely responsible and caring. They're very thoughtful about training their workforces and ensuring that they're leaving a long-lasting impact on the communities that they operate in. To go a little bit deeper into what that means, they absolutely prioritize incorporating the local surroundings into the resorts. If you look at their website online, they're located in locations across Asia, Europe, they're expanding into the Americas, and what they've tried to do is incorporate what that traditional aesthetic is, what type of homes are being built in those areas and how they can incorporate it into those hotel rooms. They emphasize deeply sourcing locally found produce, locally found poultry, locally found fish as part of their restaurant experience that they provide. And they are extremely committed to creating jobs and training opportunities for local community members. A lot of the management positions that they offer are geared towards training up the folks that they bring in from the local community and putting them in these elevated supervisor positions. They're also very invested in the local initiatives within the communities that they operate in. They have a brand and reputation that has a lot of fire that it can back to it and brings the opportunity to introduce ecotourism to a location. They're also very interested in collaborating with farmers to participate in their Eat and Grow program. They emphasize a farm-to-table experience so that folks can enjoy whatever the local fare is with the backing of a very impressive chef. There are also a lot of indirect ancillary benefits to them coming into certain locations. They have a reverberating effect on the rest of the economy because there are so many needs that form from the development of a resort. Things like laundry facilities, things like transportation and logistics, things like food sourcing. There are so many needs that they are able to put out into the local community to provide back to them. The other aspect of this project that's both related to Six Senses and what we at Weller Development want to do is heavily related to community partnerships. We have a few on the screen. I know we have a couple representatives from organizations here today and on the Zoom, and we're absolutely looking for more that we can partner with. We're interested in having conversations with you all about how we can make the project launch effective, how we can incorporate some of your innovative ideas, how we can gather real-time feedback from you all that we can either implement into design, implement into other aspects of the projects, and just engage in a meaningful dialogue with you all so you feel like your voice is heard and incorporated into this project. We're also going to be facilitating local hiring and job creation through the workforce development initiatives with the project. Those are going to come at a later date once we have advanced design and construction a bit further. And we're looking for ways to also partner with some of these organizations that I've mentioned to find what are the community needs? Are they related to the hotel? And if they're not, are there other ways that we can get involved? Are there other ways that Six Senses can get involved? And so we're looking for your all's support in helping further this process for us. And we at Weller and Six Senses also want to foster and champion some of the community events and activations to help form relationships with you all. We see ourselves being here for several years to come, and we want to form these relationships and build a community around us. And now I'll go into some of the more exciting stuff and show you all what the resort that we've been talking about is going to look like and feel like. So we're situated on 45 acres surrounding Fortune Beach. We'll be designing and constructing 64 standalone villas that will serve as the hotel keys, and 28 homes that will range from 3 to 6 bedrooms designed by world-renowned architect Olsen Kundig. The amenities that are going to be open to the public will include the spa and signature dining, and some of the amenities focused around the guest experience will include a fitness center, alchemy bar, and meeting room conference spaces. And all of these are slated to open in 2026. We've talked a bit about how ecotourism is going to be incredibly beneficial to not only the Bahamas, but the island of Grand Bahama as well, not only because of the environmental conservation efforts, but the boost to local economy. And I want to expand on that further and again reiterate our commitment to working with several organizations here today and others we'd like to engage in to incorporate the work and progress already being done on the island to help contribute to the success of the project. As Mark said, we're very proud of our collaboration with the Global Fund for Coral Reefs. We think their expertise will be instrumental in enhancing Grand Bahama's reef restoration and resilience and contributing to the preservation of this very vital ecosystem. We believe our responsibility extends beyond the resort walls. We're dedicated to reducing our environmental impact by implementing renewable energy sources, efficient systems, and constructing a hurricane-resilient coastline. We want to provide a haven not only for our guests, but for the natural elements that surround us. And we believe in a tourism model that is regenerative, leaving the environment in a better place than where we found it. And now I'd like to introduce you to the layout of the site. On the westernmost portion, you have the 28 branded residences. These are the ones ranging from 3 to 6 bedrooms. And on the easternmost portion of the site, you have the 64 standalone hotel keys, as well as the amenity spaces. I want to call your attention to the pedestrian beach access path, which is the red dotted line. This will be the access point for the public who's traveling down the coastline, and it will be their entry into the site. Public access will be maintained at the high water mark, and during construction, we will be closing off the site, including the road leading into it, due to public safety. And now I want to take you all through some illustrative renderings on the inspiration we've drawn from within our architecture. We wanted to incorporate traditional Bahamian aesthetics into the design, and we've asked our designers to draw from the local vibrant culture. We've asked them to incorporate indoor spaces with the outdoor, use large openings and high ceilings where possible, and timber structures like some that you might find on the island. As we continue to advance the design, we hope to continue embracing and enhancing the traditional Bahamian aesthetic and celebrate the spirit of the Bahamas in every corner of the resort. We're also very proud to announce that our project has embraced several sustainability design principles. There are a lot to mention, but we wanted to highlight a few key ones tonight. Our project will seek to purchase as much material locally as possible. We're going to be needing crushed coral, fill, concrete, among a few things, and we'll seek to identify the businesses that can help us in these efforts. We're also going to be placing the homes and hotel keys in strategic locations so that we can take advantage of some of the passive shading strategies that will help maximize our energy efficiency. We're going to be targeting a 51% renewable energy goal with full power backup on site. We'll be using high efficiency mechanical, electrical, and plumbing systems. We're also currently identifying whether solar arrays are going to be feasible on site, and we'll continue to study that option. The project is going to target LEED Silver certification, and currently our conservation planners and landscape architects are identifying native species that we can plant throughout the site to create a jungly feel while also not interrupting any of the natural bird and insect migratory patterns. We've also prioritized designing a very storm-resilient site. We'll have a structural dune surrounding the site that can block storm surge. We'll be raising the fill of the site behind this dune to increase our building's finished floor elevations above the levels that is typical for a storm surge. We'll also be placing infrastructure needed for the site above hurricane inundation levels. And we'll also be replenishing the beach to its pre-Dorian state. Not only have we taken many of those environmental considerations into factor, but we've also thought about the biological implications as well. As many of you here know, the Casuarina pine has been a very invasive and damaging species for the island. We'll be removing all of the trees on site and disposing of them responsibly to prevent the future spread. Sixth Census also places a strong emphasis on waste segregation, which ultimately just means sorting different types of waste into different categories so that it can be disposed of properly. This includes paper, plastic, glass, and organic waste. Sixth Census will be incorporating educational programs with their staff and guests to help them figure out where and how to implement our recycling strategies, and we'll be storing a lot of the waste on site to minimize the effects to the landfill. Our sanitary sewer will be discharged via force main to the local treatment plant, and organic waste such as food waste and garden clippings will be reutilized to go and plant into our soil to create a nutrient-dense environment for future vegetation grown on site, which will then tie back into some of the farm-to-table that Sixth Senses wants to bring. As all of you know, Hurricane Dorian has had a tremendous impact on the coral reef system. We're actively finding ways to collaborate with local organizations who specialize in the preservation and restoration of coral reef in Grand Bahama to find ways to incorporate reef restoration into not only our Sixth Senses project, but educate folks who are Sixth Senses guests at other locations so that they can understand and find ways to help promote these efforts on the island as well. And that concludes our presentation.
We thank Sixth Senses for their presentation of what their goals are and how they plan to meet these goals. But we're now going to ask Mr. Keith Bishop, who's the Maimela Consultant for the project, to come and give us an outline of the environment that is presently on site and the impact that is going to be have the impact this development will have on that, on the present conditions.
Good evening, all. My name's Keith Bishop. I'm principal at Islands by Design, environmental consultant to the project. I think most of you folks here are quite familiar with the site. It's approximately a 40-acre tract, man-made, was created with dredge spoils, and as is typical of these areas, they rapidly are habitated by pioneer and invasive species. Botanical surveys of the terrestrial elements, I think, doing this from memory now, I think we found four protected species, but all in very low numbers. And these are species that have interest from an avian standpoint. The development doesn't go too far offshore. The marine assessment, the benthic assessments, I may have to rely on others. I'm an engineer. I don't go in that area. The intent of tonight's meeting is to answer questions that folks may have on the impacts or perceived impacts. My job is to take the natural environment and overlay what the built environment is going to do to it. It's a big crystal ball. We look at it. We make assessments. We put our findings in front of the Department of Environmental Planning. The folks you see up here represented, they review the EIA. They study, they ask questions. We go backwards and forwards a little bit, and then we arrive at this point, which is public consultation, and this is where audiences like yourselves And those online get an opportunity to ask questions that may not have been addressed. So with that, I think I'll take my seat and entertain questions.
All right. Once again, we're at the exciting part of the meeting. This is now why I open the floor to you to throw your darts or your tomatoes. If it's darts, please go with the developer. If it's tomatoes, I'll take a hit or two. Oh, roses I'll take every day. All right. Ladies and gentlemen, once again, let me remind you, besides tonight, you have 21 business days in which to submit questions or concerns to both the developer and to the Department of Environmental Planning and Protection. And once again, the email address, if you are submitting it via email and not bringing it into the office physically, is grandbahama@depp.gov.bs. Okay? And 21 business days will end at 11:59 p.m. on February 28th. Anything comes after that, I'm sorry, but by law, the developer is not required to answer it or address it. Okay. So I now open the floor to questions. Please don't be shy. Yes, sir. Come up and.
It's basically at sea level. And right now, because of the invasion of Dorian and hurricanes over the last 10 years, our water table has been significantly compromised. And I'm wondering whether development like that has any plans afoot to really, because right now, because of the little bit of water that we're having through the reverse osmosis system, if you live on a second floor, you hardly get enough pressure to take a shower. And I think that's because we have to conserve basically the water to supply the many people that need it now on Grand Bahama. With a development like that, what is your plans for either producing fresh water or how you go into handle that particular phenomenon? Because people who come here, you know, they have to take showers and you know, they go and one little drip coming out, they're gonna go back home and say, ain't no water in the Bahamas. So address that. One, and then later on I'll have a couple more questions environmentally. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Bishop, who your team will address that question?
Thank you for the question. It's a good one. It's one that we're actively thinking about, and what we've done so far to date is engage with the utility company to figure out whether or not the capacity to bring that level of water needed for the resort is available. And whether or not it's available, what we're going to be doing will be putting a water treatment plant on site and figuring out how much water we can store, how we can control the flow, and what is already available to us. And so we're working with the utility company right now as we further our design to determine the level of piping, the level of force main needed to accommodate that.
Okay. Next question.
I really appreciate the emphasis you're putting on local production. Right now, farmers face tremendous challenges now. And I'm wondering whether or not you're in a position right up front to find out who are these great producers potentially and to actually fund them to begin producing, because you'll have places like around the Bahamas where they have major hotels, etc., and they always come with the idea, well, you know, they're going to buy produce locally. But then the food stores have to order all the stuff from away in order to supply the hotels, etc., and the restaurants. And the farmers are left with the bare, mangy little bit of revenue in order to be able to produce anything. So it has to be funding up front for these farmers to expand and to produce at the level that they would be able to accommodate your needs food-wise. That's a serious problem we have in the country. And we need, like, BAMSI on every island in the Bahamas, starting with Grand Bahama, where it's funded by government and supported by developments like you are, in order for us to produce a thousand more percent of the food than we're producing now.
That's a great question, and yes, we agree with you 100%. Sixth Senses is known for doing this, something similar to this around the world, actually, working in very unique and sometimes difficult environments. So yes, I think working collaboratively with the government to do this would be really helpful. In some cases, if we had more land to utilize or that was farmland, we might try and aid farmers or someone other aid them with what we actually have to provide. But I think what we have to provide is a commitment to purchase from them, therefore give them forward-looking numbers about what they need to produce. And then I think it's a collaboration between the hotel operator, you know, ourselves as developer leading that, and the government to come up with a plan. We obviously have to identify all the different farmers and users out there, but we have to identify these opportunities. And I think that actually, I can't think of a better way to source food than what you just described. It's just about getting organized. It's about identifying and then getting organized around it.
One more thing I want to add is we have been lucky enough to be introduced to one local farming group here, and we are open to meeting with more. We facilitated a meeting with that group in Sixth Senses, and it went really well. We're still in the early stages of conversation, but I think there's a lot of room to have more conversations and bring more of these local farmers to the table. So we are interested and would look to your all's help to do so.
Okay.
This is the ethos of Sixth Senses, though. This is exactly why this brand is here, is to think through these types of issues. So thank you for that question.
Give me a minute, please. We also have people online. I'll be going back and forth. Okay. One question we have is from Olivia Johnson. And the question is, what will Pegasus be bringing to the project as it relates to the environmental commitments and investments?
Pegasus has a group within their group called the Global Fund for Coral Reefs. And they have been a very active participant in not only our project, but other organizations locally. And they are always looking for more opportunities to invest and create some more social good. And so they've been great partners to us and will continue to do so. And we're excited about them being at this table with us.
Okay, so we have some more questions online. Okay. Okay, this question is from Mr. Eric Roberts. It's regarding dune construction. Will the dune be constructed using sand only, or the same grain size as the sand found on the beach naturally, or will the dune have an engineered core of riprap or some other rock material and thus require regular dune nourishment?
Aaron, I'll take that one. Thank you. The dune reconstruction is going to follow how a dune would normally form. But in this case, because of the devastation that has occurred as a result of Dorian and other hurricanes, we're going to have to, not to get too technical, design a share key that keeps the thing in place, engineer a core to that, and then nourish it with beach-compatible sands.
Okay. Now, second part of the question, I guess this person must be an engineer as well, because it says, if the method described was to be used, where will the sand be sourced from? You know, beach sand is a very valuable thing in the Bahamas. Everywhere else but the Bahamas.
It's actually something that we're trying to figure out right now, and we're working with a local group, Davies, to identify where that source is going to come from. It's most efficient and cost-effective to retrieve it from the island. We'll try to get as much as is available to us, and whatever is not available within Grand Bahamas, we'll be looking within the island of the Bahamas as well.
Okay, thank you. So please stand. Give me your name and your question.
Hi, my name is Thomas.
Oh, excuse me, could you come up to the microphone so we can...
My name is Thomas Dean, and my question is going to be more about components as opposed to anything else. Now, I'm more concerned or interested on the marine side component. This probably answers your question here, because as we all know, these canal entrances, whether it be the Fortune Bay Canal entrance or the Grand Lagoon Waterway, is actually silted up. And that has a bed of sand, the likes of which you would not imagine. Yes, I do spare in there quietly. But I'm saying that it needs to be used. But what I wanted to know is, on the marine side of it, are you guys proposing any sort of marine stations in terms of fuel depots, that sort of stuff, usable by open public areas otherwise, or is that not a part of the plan?
We have nothing planned. We anticipate building a marina at some point adjacent to the property, but we have no definitive plans right now to do that. As far as a fuel dock, there's no plans to do a fuel dock, although I wouldn't say we wouldn't do one if it made sense and it was environmentally safe, but there's no absolute intention to do that either. But that's not included in what we desire for approval right now. Instead, it's just what you see on the existing plan. And I would say that when we do decide that we want to move forward with something along those lines, I'm sure we would be back here again.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, the floor is open. Please, Mom, could you come up and come right here, please, and give me your name and question. Yeah, come right here.
Hello, my name is Olivia Paget. I'm just asking as a neighbor, as I live in Fortune Key, we have a little bit of longshore drift right now. We're losing a lot of sand. I think that comes from the project from Carnival. Are you intending to build any jetty out? Because that would be worse for us.
We can address the jetty. It's still something that we're studying right now. We're working with the DevCo partnership to figure out the division of responsibility and what we are going to take on, what they can take on, and how we can just make it, you know, the best for the current site as possible. So it's something we're still looking at.
So there is a possibility for you to build a jetty.
Well, I think it's revitalization of the existing jetty. There's been a jetty there for many years. Yeah. So the jetty was there. The jetty would be put back into place as it was pre-Dorian.
Yeah. No additional. That's just what.
No additional. But I do believe that it would create great benefit to put it back as it was. And you know, as many of you, I've seen pictures. People drove. You know, literally were driving cars out there at some point and so on. Yeah. So it was more or less a road. Right. But that's our intention right now.
Perfect. Okay.
Man, I'm going to have a really night. Once again, are there any more questions? Are there any more questions online? Any more questions in house? Okay. Next one, no.
Now, I know you have my great friend here, Rupert, and so you ended up having this concentration on the corals, but do not forget our mangroves. Please, you know, we have the nursery out there, a coral nursery, and we have the mangroves nursery right next to it. We lost, between Abaco and Grand Bahama, we lost hundreds of thousands of acres of red mangroves, specifically during Dorian. And we're doing restoration now under the auspices of Water Keepers Bahamas. So keep us in mind that when you put those funds out there, because the mangroves actually is the first nursery for all of the fish that you would eat from the ocean here in the Bahamas. It's the first. The coral reefs is the second. So when those little fish are born under the mangroves, the roots of the mangroves, they grow big enough, and then they could fight their way back out to the coral reefs, and that's the second nursery there. And so I see the two in symbolic, what's the word?
Symbiotic.
Symbiotic relationship. Yeah, yeah. Okay, so I got to put that in there now while I remember it, okay? And also, to what extent are Bahamas going to be directly involved in? You know, you have this thing in Nassau or Paradise Island where I think the people who are developing that place there, they had to come back and make a kind of offer to the government of Bahamian people that Bahamians are going to be involved in the economic structure of that whole affair. Are Bahamians being included in that regard in this development?
That's two different questions. So let me address the first one first, and I'm good with that. Yes, mangroves. If it hasn't been stated, we could go so deep down so many of these different subject matters, but mangroves have absolutely been a priority. They've been a priority alongside of, not ahead or behind any coral restoration or anything along those lines. Actually, many of the coral restoration people we've talked to, specifically a couple groups, one group on island has the same focus and same level of sort of, they put the same level of importance on mangrove restoration as well. So it's been, for us, it became very obvious. As far as Bahamian participation, yes, I mean, there's all kinds of opportunities for Bahamians to work here. Quite frankly, work here, participate, make investments, be providers of different services and so on. Could be everything from clothing to crafts, have small stores in there, a museum. I mean, it's endless the types of things that can go on in and around the Six Senses project. But I think that there's almost no way to pull it off without Bahamians benefiting from this project. This isn't an island with 350,000 people or 500,000 people that are not Bahamians. This is a smaller island, still bigger than a lot of the out islands, but it's a smaller island with, you know, give or take 30,000 people on it. We must have Bahamian participation in a really meaningful way for us to be successful. If we don't, I just don't know how you can really do this, quite frankly. So we actually are hoping to bring other Bahamians back here to Grand Bahama, or encourage people to leave maybe other places that aren't as great a places to live as Grand Bahama is, and maybe move back. I wasn't going to say where. I'm just going to say I think this is a great place to live and a great place to be.
Yes, could you come up, please? Yeah, come this way. The cameraman
is asking to come see. Hi, Sam Teicher from Coral Vita. Two questions. One, I have not read through the EIA. During the construction period, is there stuff made available as far as the plans for ensuring there isn't sedimentation and runoff into the water that obviously Six Senses and Weller wants to protect? Just trying to have the foresight on that. And then also with the rebuilding of the Grand Lucayan Waterway jetties. I didn't see anything on that beautiful rendering, but are there plans for the sort of road, the rocks, anything out there as part of the development, or is it kind of just going to be left alone, or is that still under consideration?
Okay, split that into two questions. The first one on turbidity control. The next phase of this project, as far as environmental permitting, will be to produce a document called an EMP, Environmental Management Plan. That will clearly draft out what turbidity control measures are to be carried out. DEPP have some very strong protocols that they want us to adopt. They will be adopted. It could be turbidity barriers. It could be a whole number of measures are taken in there, but that'll be addressed and put into an EMP. The EMP is a living document. It's going to live for the entire life of this project. EMPs be developed into two portions. There'll be a construction EMP, which will address some of your concerns, but then there'll also be operational EMPs. The second one on the jetty, as has been discussed here, it's something that's still under discussion. Obviously, one of the initial needs of that is to sand tighten that groin. Endless amount of sand is passing through the groin and winding up in the canal. So that's something, at a minimum, that needs to be done is to sand tighten it. Beyond that, the discussions are still ongoing between the developer and the regulatory authority.
Okay. We have a question online by Laura Price. I think this was answered earlier, but I will ask anyway. What will happen to public access to Fortune Beach?
Public access will be maintained at the high water mark, as is typical in all areas in the island. And during construction, the entire site will be closed off for public safety.
Okay. Any more questions? Going once?
We're not sure yet. Yeah, we're talking to different folks, different groups that source a lot. There's a lot of great local groups. There's groups that have worked throughout Bahamas and Caribbean, so we're establishing that. We have a team put together right now that's doing the pre-construction. And it's obviously we'd like them to do the forward construction, but we're not there yet.
Okay. Once again, I must repeat this question. Any questions? Going once. Any questions? Is there a question online? Ms. Beth, what does it say? What does the question say?
Sorry. Are there any humans being considered for engineering or directly related to infrastructure, not just services?
Are there humans going to be considered for engineering jobs directly related to design and infrastructure development, not just services after operation begins? I'm thinking, if I word that properly.
Okay. Yes, absolutely. That's been in consideration. There's already Bahamians working in some capacity.
Just to further highlight what Mark is saying, we have already engaged local engineers of record and local architects of record to help us through the design and permitting process. And so we already have Bahamians who are providing more than just services, but providing true trades that are helping us further this project.
All right. Once again, any questions? Any questions? Once, any questions? Twice. And I therefore call this meeting closed at 7:05 p.m. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Please have a safe and productive evening. Remember, if you think of any more questions after this meeting, you have until 11:59 p.m. on the 28th of February to email those questions or concerns to the developer and to the Department of Environmental Planning and Protection at grandbahama@dep.gov.bs. That's grandbahama@depp.gov.bs. Thank you. Yes, Mr. Bishop?
Aaron, are we committed to providing a second email address for the questions relating to the EIA?
Yes.
That would be info@islandsbydesign.com. That's info@islandsbydesign.com. It's also up on the developer's website.
And they will also be adding the DEPT email address for this project, to the website once they update it. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, and have a good night.